Hello and welcome to the Foreign Desk Explainer on Monocle 24. I'm Andrew Muller. In this episode, Nagorno-Karabakh and why it matters now. Nagorno-Karabakh's very name echoes those great hyphenated diplomatic headaches of bygone centuries, like an Alsace-Lorraine conundrum or a Schleswig-Holstein question, the latter of which famously prompted Lord Palmerston to remark that only three men understood it, one of whom was dead, another mad, and the other himself, and he'd forgotten all about it.
Be it a flare-up or the start of a new war, both sides, Armenia and Azerbaijan, are blaming each other.
It says much about the complexity of the Nagorno-Karabakh issue that nobody appears altogether sure why it has flared up again, leaving dozens dead in the worst violence in and around the vexatious statelet in more than 20 years. Every explanation is available, from a misunderstanding between opposing centuries which got out of hand, to a sinister manipulation of local rivalries by conniving superpowers, and none really makes much more or less sense than the others. It's perhaps best to build understanding upwards from the basics. Nagorno-Karabakh is a region of Azerbaijan, which has historically been largely ethnically Armenian. This wasn't that big a problem when both Armenia and Azerbaijan were annexed to the Soviet Union, but it became one as the USSR collapsed. The Armenians in Nagorno-Karabakh wanted to unite with their motherland, and the Azeris didn't want to give up the territory. This resulted in a hideous war in the early 1990s, largely unnoticed by a world having a hard enough time struggling to comprehend something similar but even worse in Yugoslavia. At least 30,000 people died in the fighting over Nagorno-Karabakh, and nearly a million were displaced, Azeris forced out of Nagorno-Karabakh, and Armenians who found themselves unwelcome in Azerbaijan. Russia brokered a ceasefire in 1994. The OSCE then helped establish a peace process which has been rather more process than peace, providing gainful employment for bureaucrats, diplomats, and the operators of luxury hotels and conference facilities all over Europe, but little in the way of a resolution. The difficulty is that it's next to impossible to imagine a permanent settlement agreeable to all sides. Officially, the UN recognises Nagorno-Karabakh as part of Azerbaijan, but the people who actually live there, and in some surrounding territories, regard themselves as citizens of an independent-ish country, akin to the Abkhazians of Georgia or the Transnistrians of Moldova. And at any rate, their secondary loyalty is to Yerevan, not Baku. So any purely political agreement would appear to require a concession of territory and prestige, certainly unconscionable to Azerbaijan. It is also far from certain that any conclusive military solution exists, or perhaps more pertinently, could be safely limited to Nagorno-Karabakh. As the fortifications have solidified along with the resentments, Nagorno-Karabakh has become a proxy frontline between Russia, which is allied with Armenia, and Turkey, which has recently made several unhelpfully bellicose reminders of its sympathies for Azerbaijan. It's also worth remembering that pipelines linking Azerbaijan to Georgia to Turkey, providing Europe with alternatives to Russian gas and oil, run very close to Nagorno-Karabakh. The threat of instability in the vicinity is therefore unlikely to displease Moscow, which is also the principal supplier of weapons to both Armenia and Azerbaijan. The Nagorno-Karabakh conflict won't go away. It's too complicated and too useful. Any leader on either side can call on it when necessary, an invigorating elixir of religious, national, and ethnic pride. Worryingly for the rest of us, this is also an unpredictably combustible combination, nowhere more so than the South Caucasus. That was the Foreign Desk Explainer. Tune in this Saturday for the full 30-minute edition of The Foreign Desk with Steve Bloomfield. I'm Andrew Muller. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.